You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Get everything for your next project at Menards and save big money. We carry everything to help you breathe easier. Allergen air filters help prevent seasonal allergy symptoms and improve your indoor air quality by capturing microparticles while allowing maximum airflow. Save big on Allergen air filters when you shop at Menards. View the weekly flyer and all of our great deals happening this week on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
First, there was Tuesday. Then, there was Taco Tuesday. Now at Wendy's, there's Takis Tuesday. Get a new Takis Fuego meal, a.k.a. Takis Fuego chicken sandwich, Fuego fries inspired by Takis, a bag of Takis Fuego chips, a small drink, and also a small Frosty classic. Yes, you can get that any day, but on Takis Tuesday, the Frosty is free. Make every Tuesday a Takis Tuesday. Gotta be Wendy's.
Limited time only. Participating U.S. Wendy's includes 1 ounce Takis Fuego chips while supplies last. Takis and Fuego trademarks are used under license.
Today on The Grave Talks, From Soldier to Medium, a conversation with Dean McMurray. Not all soldiers trade in their boots for golf clubs. Some get a new mission from the other side. Dean McMurray, known as the military medium, hung up his combat gear and embraced clairvoyance after 24 years of service. One unexpected visit from his deceased grandmother changed everything, setting him on a new path. Because when grandma hands down new marching orders, you don't ask questions, you follow. Dean uses his gift to help people across the world through readings, teaching mediumship, and speaking at conferences, always with a little help from the spirit world. Today on The Grave Talks, a conversation with Dean McMurray, the military medium. You are also known as the military medium.
I am.
I saw that and I was intrigued right away. I didn't even look any further. I'm like, I've got to talk to this guy. I don't know anything about him, but military medium has me intrigued. So first off, thank you for your service. You were in
thank you.
24 years.
Yeah.
And was it Army?
Army, yes.
Now, my dad was in the Air Force, and so I was an Air Force brat, so I just have a lot of appreciation for what you do and for what you do for people like me. So thank you very much for that.
Oh, absolutely.
Now, so at some point, which is an odd transition for me, from military to a medium. So let's kind of dive in. Let's go way back to young Dean. When you were a kid, did you have any abilities? Maybe when you were a young kid, sometimes they go away. Sometimes things happen when you were a teenager. Did you have things happen way before the military? And we'll get into kind of what changed and brought this new career about and this new realization of being a psychic medium.
Right. Well, you know, a lot of mediums, they'll talk about Carol, they'll talk about, oh, I knew since I was the age of three, or, you know, a very, very young age. And that was one of the first things that I kind of started looking back and, you know, was I aware at some point, a younger version of myself, was I aware of these abilities? And the simple answer was no, but I do remember bits and pieces of growing up where there were things that were, I guess, unexplained, and different things that, you know, that I saw, I know I did as a child, But I either A, never told anybody, or B, it was, oh, you're just, it's your imagination.
Right.
And I was brought up in a very, a traditional home. Christianity was very normal for us. We were actually Protestant, wasn't every Sunday, even though Mom wanted us to growing up. Was every holiday for sure. And, you know, all the big ones, right. And going to church and all that. So a very traditional, what I would say is a traditional home in America, and very blue collar family. So there was, it wasn't a spiritual, you know, talking about angels and, or demons or those kind of things. So that really wasn't talked about. But I guess I would have been what would be considered as more of a sensitive child. Because, you know, if we kind of fast forward and rewind a little bit, when I came out the quote unquote metaphysical closet.
I don't know why that made me laugh.
Right? Well, I always use that because
it's
about embracing. It's about embracing what I call our true spiritual selves, whatever that is, right? And so whether that's maybe for somebody, maybe their sexuality, maybe somebody being a medium, maybe that's, you know, it doesn't matter what that is. But I really came to find that I'm like, holy crap, like I'm actually a medium. And so I embraced that. And when I came out of that closet, my mom goes, oh, well, that just makes total sense. And I'm like, what do you, here I am, you know, in my 40s and my early 40s. And I'm like, what do you mean that makes sense? Like, oh my God, like, are you holding out on me? Some, did you erase part of my memory to, you know, the Men in Black? Right. And, you know, and she was like, no, you were always very sensitive. You preferred to be more by yourself versus around a lot of people. And she said that, you just picked up on a lot of, you know, a lot of people's emotions, what we know is like empathic abilities now, right? And she said, and you had what I would call like imaginary friends. And she, I was like, really? And I completely does, you know, all my imaginary friends agree that I can't remember that. So, but, you know, I couldn't remember that part of my youth. And I was like, wow, you know, this is just like unveiling a part that I was like, wow, you know, only a mother that would remember that. And so to me, it was really fascinating. But, you know, I remember like weird things. So a little synopsis to paint the picture for everybody. I grew up on the Canadian border in northern Minnesota, little border town up there. And, just like I said, blue collar family, very salt of the earth, nothing crazy. Family was very close with other family members. I do remember because we would get lots of snow during Christmas and other winter months. But I do remember one winter, and I still don't know the significance, but I still remember it as vivid as, you know, this was back in the 70s. I was probably four. I don't know my age at the time. So mid 70s. And I remember the snowfall. It was on I think it was a Christmas Eve or Christmas. Yeah, I believe it was Christmas Eve. And the snow was, the flakes were just crazy that year. And I remember looking out our living room window. And it was a big window. And I remember seeing a owl on the side of the road. And it was looking like right at me. And this thing was as vivid as ever. And I was like thinking, wow, I've never seen an owl before. Like, Mom, look, there's an owl. Or Dad, looking. It's like, oh, there's no owl. And, you know, of course they get there and I turn back around. Of course, there's no owl. And I still remembered it. And so not just the owl. There's other things that, you know, bits and pieces here and there that are just, it was kind of perplexing. So I guess to answer your question is, was I aware of the abilities then? No. However, looking back, there are sporadic events that I remember that when I was, you know, very young, going, there's, you know, now knowing what I know or remember, I should say, I shouldn't say all of a sudden I came to a knowing, it's remembering of what I know.
When they say that seeing an owl is like a connection to a spiritual.
Absolutely. Realm. It is. Absolutely. And of course there, you know, whether you're, you know, get into the totem aspect of it or the spirituality significance of the owl. But yeah, owls are all about wisdom and connection to the spirit world. And in fact, now I actually even have a raven that is one of my spirit guides that I connect to quite often when I do remote viewing and want kind of a different reflection or view of whether it's connection with the spirit world. So, and believe it or not, this is the craziest thing, is a connection to animals is where our backyard will literally get filled with blackbirds. And I know, you know, and they're common off and on, but, you know, not like to the level of, you know, was it Hitchcock, the birds or whatever, our trees. Well, quite like my wife will go outside on the patio and she's like, Dean, your birds are here. And I'm like, honey, they're not my birds. We have a discussion. They're not my birds. Well, she said, they certainly have a message for you. And they'll follow me too, which is interesting. But, you know, you talked about, before we went live, Carol, you talked about animals. And not that I'm an animal communicator per se, but I'm, you know enough that, you know, animals carry with it not only a message of them, of theirs as well, but also being the bridge sometimes between the spirit world and, you know, the medium, quote unquote, the medium themselves, but being able to, you know, connect and like, well, what are you trying to tell me? You know, it's more than, you know, Lassie's telling you that Timmy fell down the well. You know, it could be more about, I'm concerned about your health, or you have unresolved trauma, that this is why you're having problems sleeping, or, you know, and so many, you know, and the list goes on. But digressing a bit, but, you know, when we talk about animals and we talk about memories from the past, it's kind of interesting. They haven't always been the staple in my life, as far as I've always had dogs in my life, but, you know, as far as it was interesting, but that was, you know, you asked about my you know, awareness, we'll call it. That is one memory, probably one of the earliest, that probably jumps out, you know, and at, you know, just so vivid, and is still, you know, today. So,
so you end up enlisting.
Yeah.
And I'm going to guess you were young, maybe teens, early 20s. When you enlisted. So the military life doesn't seem real compatible with being a psychic medium. But so at some point, though, something happened and it kind of opened up the gates for you again.
Yeah.
And what was that that happened?
Well, I first want to preface this by sharing with everybody a little bit of what I did in the military. Kind of set the stage, because there's, you know, just like everywhere in the world there, you know, you can do so many different jobs.
Right.
And sometimes it creates a mentality around the, or the environment of. And so for, well, almost 15 years, I was an infantryman. And about six of those years in there, I was a paratrooper, meaning, you know, jumped out of planes and all that great stuff. And so it was a very alpha male driven world. Like, you know, you don't show any weakness. It was certainly not let's embrace our inner selves
and
talk about
side.
Love and light. It was not that. It was not. It was very much gung-ho, very hard-headedness, you know, violence right. of action type, because that's what you needed, right? Mm-hmm. To mm-hmm. accomplish a job, and it creates an environment. And then going on into the other 10 years that I added on, you know, was with the active duty Army National Guard. And that's how I came to the state of North Dakota, where I now live, and in a full-time capacity. And of course, they were more administrative, kind of a different role, but I, and it was still the military, as you well know, with your dad being in the military, it's still what I would call very black and white. And now one of the things, Carol, is I never had a, you know, even though I was saying earlier that I could look back in reflection of when I was very young and this OWL experience and the other things, but I don't remember, you know, up until this, the point of this coming out of the closet, so to speak, or having this spiritual awakening, I had no awareness of this. And so I was going, you know, just bebopping along and thinking, oh, I'm doing what I'm going with my heart, or, you know, what I feel guided type deal. And, but, you know, it really culminated, Carol, with I had gotten out of the Army, came into the National Guard, met my now wife, and we had my daughter, and then she was about, I want to say she was, good gracious, she was about 5. And at the time when I deployed for the very last time. And so, you know, things, dynamics for me had changed a great deal. All the previous deployments and time in the military, I was very much single, no kids.
Yeah,
just
that
mom
would
and
change.
Dad.
Everything.
Oh, tremendous, tremendous, because, you know, dynamics, you know, mm-hmm. you have somebody that's so much closer now. And, but long story short, when I came back, our son, who I didn't mention about this, of course, every long deployment, you get a mid-tour leave, they call it. You get a couple weeks in the middle, and that darn leave, I don't know, my wife ended up pregnant, and we lovingly refer to my son now, who is 13, as our deployment baby. But when I returned, of course, our son Wyatt was born, and things were going good, but then it was like all holy hell started breaking loose. And what I mean by this is clocks and pictures started coming off the wall, you know, and it was like poltergeist type deal, right?
Oh.
And yeah, and I was like, what the holy heck? In the town that we were living in at the time, there was a train that would come through town. And, you know, and sometimes if it was carrying a lot of coal or whatever, the grain, I think a lot of times, if it was really loaded down, sometimes it would shake some of the homes, but nothing would ever come off the walls. And I was trying to, you know, in theory, what, you know, when you experience something for the very first time that defies logic, what do you try to do? Put logic to it, because that's all you know. And yeah. It's like, what the blank blank is going on? And so I'm like, well, I didn't, you know, I must not put the screw in the drywall, you know, anchor and all that great stuff. But then as you would watch things come off the wall, and it looks like it was launched, like somebody would fling it with their hand, going, wow, that's not, you know, there, I can't explain this. And, you know, and what that culminated with is there was a local, my wife and some girlfriends were seeing a local psychic who I lovingly refer to as the voodoo chick. And she doesn't do voodoo, by the way. But that was my language, because what I didn't understand, I poked fun of. And, you know, and I was like, and she, her and a bunch of friends would go do classes and different things and readings. And I said, maybe you should call this voodoo chick and have her come over. And I didn't know what they do. You know, I didn't know what a medium or a cleanser, we talked about that earlier, But she, in fact, did cleanse homes. And I thought, I don't know what's going on, but I just want it to stop. I don't care what they need to do. If they need some chicken blood, if we need to chant something, you know, I don't care at this point. I just want it to stop. Make it. What button do I push?
Right.
And quite honestly, when she came over and she started connecting to my deceased grandfather, who, by the way, was a World War One veteran and worked with horses, another animal connection. He was a farrier during the war. And she brought forward evidential information and all that great stuff. But I wasn't in the headspace, Carol, of receiving a message from Grandpa, because my mind was still going, nothing against Grandpa, but why the hell is he here? Where was he after Bosnia? Where was he after Korea? Where was he after Afghanistan? Where was he after, you know, going on and on and on. And of course, you know, this gal was like, well, I don't know. But she said, I can tell you he's here now. And here's his message. And I was so locked, vapor locked, so to speak, of trying, like, why would Grandpa step forward? And I fell short of the message. And fast forward a couple of weeks after that, and nothing slowed down as far as the poltergeist activity. And I was thinking, great, like, you know, nothing worked. And and I was washing bottles, actually, where it culminated, Carol, was I was washing bottles for my then newborn son. And my daughter and my wife were all sleeping. And I was up, I don't know why I was washing bottles at midnight, but that's what I was doing. And I had a feeling, a knowing that my grandmother, my paternal grandmother, was behind me. And I quite literally started talking to myself, going, how the heck do I know it's Grandma? And then I answer myself by going, I don't know, but it's Grandma. Like, there was no doubt, Carol, in my bones. Because I think we just have that innate sense of knowing, like, when we're around mom or dad or grandma or grandpa, somebody that's close to us, right? And so, you know, and now that I realize it's that clear knowing, the clear cognizant aspect. And so when I did that, you know, I know that, you know, that she wasn't there to hurt me. And I was like, you know what, I probably watched something on TV, and of course, you know, I look back and there was nothing there. But I could just feel all the senses tingling. I just knew she was there. And so I went to bed, still knowing that she was there with me, and got into bed. And I was laying there with my eyes closed, but I was still very much awake. And I don't know about you, but, you know, me, if I know, you know, if something's on your mind, you start kind of, you know, talking or in a sense, mulling it over. And my ego says, you know, if this is all baloney, you know, if she was really here, she would prove it. And as soon as those thoughts left my head, the room actually turned absolutely frigid, like you walk out in the Midwest during, you know, February. And I was like, holy crap. Like, that was immediate. It wasn't gradual. It wasn't. And then, of course, my ego kind of trying to make logic. Well, was that off-peak power? Is that because the wife has a fan on? And then again, you know, I go, well, if she's really here, why does she just touch me? And it was, I still remember it like it was yesterday, Carol, that it was a gentle yet firm pressure that started at the top of my head and went to the bottom of my feet. And quite literally, it was like somebody laying on top of me, pushing me into the bed. And I'm kind of a side sleeper. And so when I had this sensation, I could feel and I could hear the springs compress, and my body became like heavier than lead, and where I could, you know, feel myself sink into the mattress. And I'm like, holy, you know. And it was like the 6-year-old little boy in me came out and was like, all right, Grammy, you gotta leave, like,
this
you're
is
freaking
much.
The hell out of me. And was like, who did I piss off, or how do you stop this? And so as soon as I said, love you, you gotta go, or, you know, you need to leave, everything return to normal. But I was sitting up in bed and I was completely soaking wet, like sweating. And I was like trying to figure out what just happened. And I was like, am I having a latent psychosis, PTSD moment?
You would think it's got to be some mental health
right
issue.
And I think that's very normal. And so, and my wife, who typically never sleeps very deep, I was trying to wake her up and she was sleeping the deepest I think she has ever slept. And she finally woke up and I said, you need to wake up. There's somebody in the house. And she's thinking somebody breaking in.
Right.
And I was that would be easy to explain. Like that's a physical, you know, something physical. You can respond to something physical. And I was like, no, there's like a spirit here. And she was like, how do you know that? And I was like, right? I don't know. You need to call the voodoo chick.
I need help with
it. She was like, yeah, right. And she was like, Dean, it's like 2 o'clock in the morning or whatever time it was. And she said, you need to go back to sleep. And I said, fat chance of that. And of course, you know, I stayed up all night watching TV. So moving on, that was my come to Jesus moment, because I knew that it was such a visceral experience. It was, no matter who tried to debunk that for me, no matter how many skeptics, cynics, didn't matter, would say, oh, you're experiencing this. I knew what I experienced. And I think you talked about it earlier, is that, you know, different people have different truths.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, that was my truth. And I was like, there is no, like, I will, you know, bet my life on what I just experienced. And so I was like, holy cow. And I was like, so, you know, and so I kind of went on a journey of, you know, what does this mean? Why me? Why now? And as I shared, you know, well, one of the things I didn't talk about is I just came back from deployment, but I was in my last 3 years of military service. I was getting ready to retire. I was going to work for the VA was the plan. And, you know, and I was like, dad doesn't have time for a mental breakdown right now. You know, we got
to afford it. We can't afford it.
We got babies in the house. We got, you know, and I was like, and the wife was still working for corporate America and all that. And so we were doing really well for ourselves as far as, you know, kind of an upper managerial level stuff. And I was like, what is going on? And so I went back to that voodoo chick, the psychic. And I was like, I want to know what's going on. Like, this is bugging me. Like, it's not stopping. It's, you know, and she was like, Dean, you're a medium. And I quite honestly, Carol, told her, I said, you're full of shit. And she said, you know, I've been called that before. She said, maybe I am. But she goes, that doesn't mean that, you know, you're any less of a medium. And I said, what does that even mean? Like, you know, what, you know, I get what the term means, but what does it mean for Dean McMurray? And she goes, that's a great question. And it's the only question that you can only answer, not
that's
anybody
true.
Else.
She can't. She wouldn't have that information.
Right. Like, well, right. And so she said, because it's different for everybody. And she said, you know, let's try something. She said, I want you to get really quiet. And she said, I want to see if something comes to you, like the answer to that. And what was really interesting, because Carol, I hadn't meditated up until that point. And as soon as I did that and I quieted all the BS in my head, it just kind of, you know, came in. And I was like, well, that was easy. Like that button, right? That was easy button. And I was like, well, she said, what is it? And I was like, well, it's the same reason why I joined the military. It's to help other people at a bigger level, right? So if you think in the military is to help the oppressed or whatever the mission is,
mm-hmm.
You know, in various different types of roles and missions, but in the same way. And, you know, and it's to be in service of others at a bigger level. And she said, well, I couldn't think of a better job to work at a quote unquote bigger level than being a psychic medium. She said, that can mean anything. She said, you could go anywhere, do anything. That could, you know, so broad and general. But she said, that's great. That's awesome. And about the same time, she said, I want to see what you get. And it was my very first, she kind of sprang it on me in my first reading, so to speak. And she said, I don't want any pressure, but she said, I'm going to write down some names. And she said, I just want to see what you get, how you're getting, you know, kind of anything. And she wrote them down, you know, kind of hid them. And I just got really quiet and I started focusing. And if you think of it, in my mind's eye, it was completely black. And then I almost saw like a roulette wheel of sorts, you know, kind of like, was it The Price is Right, where they spin the big wheel, right? And in a sense, if you invert that wheel on its side, and that's how it kind of looked, but they all had heads on it. And it's not in a grotesque way, but it was just faces. And it was kind of interesting because they scrolled in and this one lady, and it stopped on an older lady's face. And then it was almost like, you know, it advanced forward so I could see it very clearly. And I was describing everything as I saw it the best I could. And then, you know, and then it took me in and showed me like earrings and all this. And then it went over and all of a sudden it switched like a, you know, like a snap, you know, a switch. And she started showing me these tubs is all I could describe it. And I said, I don't understand it, but they're made out of, looks like to be metal or stainless steel because they're very shiny. And the welds are so beautiful. I said, they're just, I guess the word that I can only describe it as beautiful because they are. They're very well built and just the workman, the craftsmanship and the work of it is very nice. And I said, but they're big. It's really kind of odd. I've never seen them before. And so what we got done and everything, and she goes, wow, that was really cool. And she goes, that lady was my husband's deceased mother. And she gave me her name, and she goes, and you described her perfectly. That's exactly what she looked like. And she goes, those tubs that you were talking about, she goes, you don't know it, but my husband's family has collected maple syrup for many, many years. She said, they've just done it. And she said, finally, this past year or whatever, they decided that they were going to order new vats for boiling down the maple syrup. She said, it takes a tremendous long time. And she said, to only get a small amount, you got to boil a tremendous amount of sap. And she said, so his family had these vats made. And she said, you're correct. They're made out of stainless steel. And she said, they are like perfectly welded, like a picture perfect, right? And like a work of art. And she said, so yeah, she was showing you that was something that she was very well involved in, was the maple syrup aspect of their family. It was a big family thing that they always did every fall. So yeah, so it was kind of interesting. So, you know, and I was like, okay, so I'm a medium. Now what?
It all just was almost like in a day, something just changed. I mean, you'd been having the paranormal activity at your house.
Yeah.
And do you think that had anything to do with something trying to get your attention?
Oh, 100%.
Or do you think that was actual, you were 100%. Living in a haunted house?
Oh, no, 100%, Carol, because we understand that, you know, so go back to the word poltergeist, right? And really, in reality, poltergeist is a German word meaning noisy ghost or spirit. And the aspect, because it never tried to harm us. And so I look back on it and go, well, 100% it was trying to get my attention. Like, Dean, wake up. Dean, I'm trying to get your attention. Dean, I'm here. Like, you know, saying, hey, like, you're not listening. I know you see the picture move. I know you saw me throw that clock. I know that, you know, quit picking the stuff off the floor and would you listen?
Interesting. Did, was How your wife, Did she also experience the activity? Because I mean, if the clock comes off the wall,
she saw it. She was more of a believer than I was. And she is like, well, there's, you know, she would totally be the person, there's a spirit here. And I'm the person that like, oh, whatever. And so I was the one that was very headstrong. My wife was the one that was the big believer.
And so interesting.
I wasn't a cynic, but I was very much the skeptic.
And the way your grandma kind of led you to it, like, yeah. I'm here, like I can get through to you. And
well, it's because she was very close to me.
Mm-hmm. And you know spirit. It's like my dad and I know when he's around. Like, in fact, I got a sign from him today. I know whenever he's around.
Yeah.
And there's that. And I even said out loud, oh, dad, like I so picked up on that. You just know the feeling. And that wraps up part one of our conversation with Dean McMurray, the military medium. You can get more information at his website, deanmcmurray.com. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and all the advanced episodes, everything without commercials, become a Gravekeeper. Sign up on Apple Podcasts where you can try it for 3 days free. Or you can also go to patreon.com/thegravetalks and find everything there. I'm Carol Hughes, and for all of us here at The Grave Talks, thank you very much for listening.